Yeah, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. This week, the guys talk about how it began with a question.
Excellent. Welcome to episode 8.
Love under rocks.
Scratches your arse.
You're an idiot.
Anyway, let's go.
Okay. So we thought today we would talk about
We're going to reminisce.
We're going to be a bit reminiscent and also talk to, I suppose help other people who've, you know, done a little bit of work to reminisce and people who haven't to get that, you know, what's going on for them right now is absolutely what's meant to be going on for them.
I don't know whether you've been really clear with that, mate.
Okay, well, how about you
We're going to talk about how we first embarked on the journey, and everybody's on a journey, right?
Yeah.
And it's, I suppose this really is talking to the people that are on a journey, because the stuff that we'll talk about now will remind you of the first time you started to think about how you were thinking. And also it's for the people that are beginning to think about how they're thinking. Does that make sense? Because they've come through that repetitive life. You know, I remember as a kid growing up, so my dad is like a really staunch Catholic, and I was raised in Ireland, which is, you know, was at one stage considered the most Catholic country in the world. And it's funny, we used to get out of bed on a Sunday morning, we'd put our Christmas jumpers on. You know, you always had a Christmas jumper. Put your Christmas jumper on. I did. And we'd make our way around to church. So that would happen every Sunday morning. And then, you know, as we'd go around there, I'd watch people make their way around. And as they got closer to the church, they'd become holier. And then they'd get in there and, you know, everybody would be judging, oh, we're holier than them and we're holier than them. Well, we've put more money into, because I used to watch my father put money in the collection box, and he would always hide the money he was putting in. He never wanted anybody to see because he didn't want to be judged. And then people would leave the church and they would do things completely fucking contradictory to what they'd been praying to. And then we'd go home, and every night we were to sit down and say our prayers. You know, we'd go in and we, you know, and it was this repetitive stuff that we were doing all of the time. And, you know, I watched the result of that for my father, that repetition, you know, that giving up of his time.
Repetition.
Yeah, repetition, sorry. School teacher and you, mate. And I'd watch that repetition. Is that right? Repetition.
Repetition.
Repetition. And I'd watch that stuff. And one of the things I've learned later in life is that repetition lulls the brain to sleep. You know, practice doesn't make perfect. Yeah. It makes permanent. And so I remember growing up, and there came a point in time in my life when I started to question. Well, I'd always questioned stuff.
Yeah,
had you?
Too. Yeah, right from when I was little. I think 6 is the youngest age I remember.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think up until then, you know, if I look at Lexi now, like I'm her God to her, you know.
Yeah.
She's at that age where she just about still believes everything I say.
Just about.
You know, when they tip into 8, that's when they start questioning and they stop believing things that you say. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So 0 to 7, the brain tends to, you know, have this enclosed world, you know, and mum and dad are part of it, and they are their gods, you know. And then they start to realize that their school teachers know more than their mum and dad. So then they start to realize that their view of their parents starts to shift. They're not quite the god that they were, you know, which is neither a good nor a bad thing. It's just a part of what occurs.
Yeah.
And then you have like 7 to 14 is where you want to break away and be an individual, you know, and you start to realize that you know that you're not your parents and you're not the sum of them, and you start to grow into the fact that you are an individual. And then you got like 14 to 21, and 14 to 21 is where you try to cut the apron strings. And then 21 to 28 is kind of where you have a good time, you know, you kind of blow yourself up. I blew myself up. 21 to 28, mate.
Yeah.
I can't remember most of it. Okay. Like, really, I can't. It's when I took the most amount of drugs. I think it was 21 to 28 in my life. Then you have 28 to 35 is really where you start to ask those 4 primal questions. Where have I come from? Where am I going? What do I do while I'm here? What happens to me afterwards? And I think it was when I was 21, I think it was, that I had my first real breakup, my first real heartbreak, Mills. Like I was absolutely
devastated.
Oh my God, man. I was like, you know, where you're contemplating taking your, like you're contemplating suicide because you've had your heart ripped out and you think, I'm never going to get a woman as beautiful. I'm never going to get a woman as smart. This, and you have this huge infatuation that you just can't. And I remember the day it happened. I remember how it happened. I remember what she said to me. And I remember that night, I was driving through Rowe Street in Perth, and my heart was just broken. And I had 94.5 on, which
is like the worst radio station to have on at that time.
Because every song,
heartbreak song.
Every song is a heartbreak song. If you play any of them backwards, you get your car back and your house back and your wife back and your partner back and your kids back. So I'm like, oh, because, and then on the radio comes a guy named Michael Domenico Rowland. And this was, you know, you've heard the cheesy statement. It's only when the
student is ready
that the teacher appears.
And you forgot that statement.
I know, I did. And I've had a coffee, which kind of, I know. That's why I'm speaking really fast.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is not an auction, Mitch. It's not an auction. Anyway, so, I remember I'd had my heart broken, and I'm listening to this radio, and this guy, Michael Domenico Rowland, comes on, and he starts talking about metaphysics. So he starts talking about life, which was in a way that I'd never heard, but also that I kind of felt was the first time I was hearing somebody talking about life without because I was always raised to think that, you know, you had to behave a certain way, talking about life as if life was on your side, as opposed to feeling like there was some sort of competition going on that you had to behave a certain way, or you were going to go to hell or you were going to go to heaven. So he was talking about life in its purest form. You know, metaphysics is basically how, you know, the mechanism behind why we do what we do and who we are. Does that make sense? Yeah. And the study of that. And I was like, fuck, this guy is amazing. And I remember the first book, everybody remembers the first book that really affected them. The first book I ever bought in the field of metaphysics was Michael Domenico Rowland's, I think it was called Absolute Happiness.
Yeah.
But I never read it because I couldn't read it.
Yeah.
It was just too difficult. I couldn't get my head into it. But it was when I was handed James Redfield's The Celestine Prophecy. You know, you always remember your first book, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember reading it and feeling, I'm so inspired by this, but I feel as if I'm going against, like, my religious upbringing. And yeah. I felt like I was going against my dad, and I was going against their philosophies and beliefs. But at the same time, I was reading information that was enabling me and empowering me and making me think outside of repetition.
And I think that's what it is. I think for so many people, what brings them to doing something is the repetition in their lives. The repetition in their lives. Because for everybody, it's like the biggest thing that shows that you've had an emotional reaction to something is that emotion keeps repeating itself.
Yeah.
And like you said, when you were a kid, you watched everybody sort of living the same life and doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It was the same for me. But then it turned out that I was doing the same thing too, that every year it was like the same story. Like, I was a school teacher and I love kids and I love teaching. But I remember thinking, there's got to be more to this.
Yeah.
How can I be this person and know so much and yet be caught in this cycle and not know how to get out of it? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And then I'd have the same pattern with all my relationships, whether it be friendships, whether it be partners, whatever. The same thing. Was happening over and over and over again. And it was like, what is going on that I get myself to this point? And then once I get myself to this point, relationships break up and then I'm starting it again. It's like this whole cyclical thing that was happening. And I think that really for a lot of people, the first thing that gets them to doing anything about what's going on is that they're asking that question.
Yeah.
It's like, what is it that, what, there's got to be something more.
Yeah.
There's got to be something more outside of this cycle that I know, you know?
Because I mean, we have an innate knowing that outside of our history, there's more mystery. There's more for us to understand. And everybody has that knowing.
Yeah.
You know, why do we climb huge mountains? It's because we want to know what's up there. When I get up there, and when we get up there, we as much as we get to admire and look around, it's really how far we've come that impresses us. Does that make sense?
So when
we look back on the path and the journey and the road and the climb, and, you know, that's when we look back and go, wow, look how far I've come. So we climb and ascend things to look around at our new environment, but also to recognize how far we've come, to recognize what we've learned, what we've picked up along the way. And so if we tie that into what we're talking about, the reason that we have, a desire to look at ourselves. It's because we want to see how far we've come. We want to measure ourselves and be able see what we've achieved and how we've helped people and how we've grown. And that's a natural part. What we've accomplished. And that's a natural part of who we are. Yeah. I think it is. I think it's a very natural part of who
we are. And I look back and I think, because my first book was Conversations with God.
It's a great book.
Which I loved.
I didn't like the second and third one.
I loved the first one. And I think for me, that was very controversial for me to even have read that book, because I grew up in a Catholic background. So that whole concept that you can have a conversation with God even on its own was full on.
Yeah.
But what I loved about it was that it made me think, and that I was talking to people around and I was thinking in a way that there was this question that was out there. It was like, what if, you know, what if that's possible, or what if, you know,
so he's do you mean like, what if somebody actually did have a conversation with God?
Well, actually, not that. He was talking about something. I can't remember exactly what it was. He was talking about something in the book, and I can't remember what the concept was, but I remember asking, well, hang on a second, that can't be right. But then somebody else was talking to me about their perception of it or their view on it based on them having read the book. And so that gets me to think, well, what if he's right about that? Mm. You know, what if, you know, you can get past thinking about things the way that you're thinking about it? What if you don't have to, we talked about this in another podcast, what if you don't have to have this stuff that happened to you and lug it around as luggage? What if you can stand on it and make it the greatest thing, you know? So it was like, that was my first introduction to actually thinking.
Does that make sense? So you're saying like, it was really where, you know, what if what actually happened to you was a blessing?
Yeah, exactly right.
What if what actually happened to you had a higher purpose than what you're giving it?
Totally.
What if what actually happened to you, like if you look at any of the greats, like you look at Oprah Winfrey, her upbringing was horrendous. Like she was sexually abused, bashed. And she talks very openly about it. But she also talks about the fact that it was because of that she was able to go on and help so many people and become such an iconic figure in the human development world, because she is.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember Cleve saying something great to me. He said, what she actually does is she shines the light on people. She'll find somebody that has had something really traumatic happen to them, who has turned it into their greatest gift. Then she gets the Oprah light and shines it on them, and they just fucking take off, you know? I remember Cleaver saying to me, fuck, if she shines the Oprah light on you and you don't have a fucking product or a book or anything to sell afterwards, you're fucked. So you got to be ready to be able to have that actually happen for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when I think the important point there is that when I was, you know, when I was starting to think about how I was thinking, I realized that, you know, I have something to give. You know, we all have this innate knowing that we have something to give. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's a part of us that has something to give. You know, it's not all of us, but there's a part of us has something to give. And we want to be able to give that. We want to be able to shine our light on people. We want to get to our deathbed and look back on what happened and know that we made a difference, you know, know that we did something, know that people are talking about us, you know, that when we leave here, that people are talking about the difference that we actually made. Does that make sense?
Totally.
And I just think that, you know, when I think about when I read Conversations with God, I also read the book and realized that what he was saying, because he was only having a conversation with himself.
With himself, of course.
What he was saying made more sense than anything I'd ever had dictated to me through Catholicism, and that's not me having a stab at Catholicism. Yeah. I mean, I had a huge realization about religion this year, and I think one of the things
you really have.
I did have a huge. I was like, holy shit, because I really used to go in and give religion a bit of a kicking, and that was my shit. You know, that was my stuff. Going in there and doing that was my stuff, and I remember sitting back and thinking, oh my God. You know, it gave us such a moral ground upon which to stand that people needed.
Yeah, of course.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it was a step you know, on the way.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Maybe, yeah. And it doesn't have to be in the way. It was a step on the way for me. And I realized that, you know, with my mom and my dad, they really needed that stuff and they still really need it. And because it keeps them on their toes and it keeps them accountable.
And so do you.
And I need it. Absolutely. Because it keeps me on my toes and it keeps me accountable. Yeah. And I got really humbled to that. I really thought, Jesus, okay, yeah, I get it. I get this thing. Sure. It's a story. It's a fable. It is what it is and people can make out of it. And nobody's ever really going to know the truth because it's past history. But it gave us a moral ground upon which to stand, and it helped us to ask a bigger, better question. And again, it gets back to that thing of where we notice now that religion is realizing, Jesus, we need to do something. We need to get with the times. You know, we need to adopt the sciences. You know, we need to think about, because science is advancing way more than we are, way more than religion is. Science is advancing way more than religion is. And if they don't adopt what science is saying, it's going to make them futile. So I think that science is now giving validity to what perhaps the philosophers were teaching originally in the beginning.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Definitely. So I think that, like, going back though to this whole, you know, our beginnings and where we started. Yeah. Like, I look back at that, and I'm thinking as we're talking here that really what happened is that we asked ourselves a question. Like, and everybody, I think that. Like, if we were to survey everybody that we've worked with or anyone that's done work on themselves, I suppose that everyone would have had to start with asking themselves, like, is this it? Is there something more? What else can, you know, how could I do this differently? How can I live differently? And well, it starts with the question.
And I think, how can I be a greater, better human being?
Example of me.
Me. And how can I shine some of my light somewhere else?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when I was doing it back then, I remember
doing what back then. Well,
when I first attended my first seminar,
and
I was starting to do PD work, and it was very airy, fairy, kooky back then. So you'd had people like Deepak and Louise Hay, and you know, take Eastern philosophy, bring it into the West, and then try to ram it down the throat of Westerners. You know, and then because of that, they became the metaphysical superstars. Yeah. Oh my God, these guys are thinking, you know, because they had all these Eastern philosophy. What, you know, the Gita is millions of years old. Its teachings are you know, go back millions and millions of years. They talk about astronomy, astrology, you know, they were great mathematicians.
Yeah.
And so when you have that sort of information being brought into the West, of course, whoever delivers that message is going to be pedestalized.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? They're going to be pedestalized. And they become the new gods, you know, they become the metaphysical superstars.
Which is exactly the same as what was happening before.
But on top of that, they also get condemned and ridiculed. And we've had our fair share of that. Anybody who's delivering a message has their fair share of ridicule, and that's part of delivering a message. When you're getting ridiculed, you know you're on track.
Yeah.
That's, and if you're not getting ridiculed, you should fucking stick your helmet on, because somebody's going to come and ridicule you. So I think that that's an important thing to understand. But also, my point there was is that when that sort of thing happens, and when I started looking, I remember the shock on my father's face was, you know, you're still going to go to church, right? You're still, and I'm like, Dad, and you know, they'd be like, you spent how much money?
That's right. It's going to appear for different people in different ways. Like, people are like, what do you mean you're spending money on working on yourself? Or what do you mean?
What's wrong with you?
What do you mean you're going to a seminar? There's nothing wrong with you.
You're perfect. What do you think? And I started doing work because I thought something was wrong.
Me too. It was like, something's wrong. Something's not right here. Yeah. I have to do something because otherwise I'm not going
to
move
forward. Well, only to get to the point to realize that everything was right.
As soon as you get to the point that, oh my God, there's nothing to change, you do personal development work because you love it, because you just want to know who you are to a greater degree. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
And
it feeds my soul. I love that.
And I think
learning about myself.
You need people to question that stuff.
Yeah.
You need people to say to you, because you've got to be able to answer it. You might not be able to answer it at the beginning. You know, you might not be able to answer it at the start, but there will come a point that you're able to go, this is why I did this, because it gave me a better quality of life. It allowed me to be a better human being. It encouraged me to think about how I was thinking.
Yeah.
It allowed me to feel more compassion and empathy and understanding, and it allowed me to actually take control of my own thoughts.
So the thing is, though, is that that's not for you to answer it for anybody else. That's for you to answer it for yourself. When somebody else is questioning you, they're questioning you because there's a part of you that doesn't quite get why you're doing it. As soon as you can register yeah. with that, then yeah. it's not about explaining it to anybody yeah. else. Yeah. It's not about explaining it to anyone out there. It's about knowing inside of yourself yeah. why you're doing this.
I think for me, you know, it's like, it becomes a way of life.
Totally.
Does that make sense? It's like, why do you listen to music? Because it becomes a way of life.
Yeah.
Why do you have a shower? Because it becomes a way of life. And if I don't have a shower, I'm going to stink.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't look, if I don't read, if I don't educate myself, then I'm going to stink. I'm not, you know, I'll go out to dinner now and the people that sit around the table will have really, of course you have a mess and a joke and a laugh and you take the mickey, but we have really,
really
deep,
high quality
conversations yeah. that are really deep. Does that make sense? Yeah. Where years ago I would sit around a table and everybody would be pretending to be something else, you know? Do you know what I mean? And it yeah. was like everybody was ignoring the fucking gorilla in the yeah, corner. Yeah, nobody's yeah. talking about what actually is actually going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, if I ask one of my buddies, how are you? I actually want to know. Does
How
that make sense? You know, I actually want to hear an answer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. That's also an age thing as well, right? Because as you grow and as you get older, you start asking yourself those questions and you start realizing that the quality of the people you want right. in your life are different and the quality of person you want to be is different as
yeah.
well, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's important to understand that you got to expect that you are going to be challenged.
Totally.
You got to expect that you're going to rock the boat when you start to think about how you're thinking. And the purpose of rocking the boat is, you know, I never try to convert. I actually, that's not true.
Yeah,
at the beginning, I was like, Mom, you got to read this book. Dad, you got to read this book. I'd come home from the seminar, Mom, I know why you're so fucked up. and then suddenly you want to fix them and, you know, and then I stopped that after a while because I just got resistance.
Yeah.
And then I realized over the years that the greatest thing, I had to let go. Does that make yeah. sense? I had to let go of trying to fix them. And when I let go of them, I actually let them in. Does that yeah. make sense? And I think that now, you know, now you go through the path and the phase of where you realize that you aren't influenced people because you're clear with yourself. You know, the clearer you get with who you are and the more you're able to articulate who you are from who you are, the more people will listen rather than trying to run around because we're all really good at diagnosing everybody else's shit. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
really, and humans are really transparent. You know, I know when I'm trying to fix everybody else, it's actually me and people can yeah. see that.
You learn that at greater degrees as you go as
yeah,
well, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I'm trying to fix you. Nah,
it's actually me.
Sucks.
It's my stuff. Yeah. But I think it's important for people to understand, especially when they're branching into this, that this is a natural occurrence
yeah,
of what happens.
Totally.
You're going to be questioned. You have to be questioned because you have to be kept on your toes.
100%.
It's like in a relationship when somebody comes along and, you know, if somebody is threatening the relationship on the outside, it's because you're not on your toes. You know, you've got to be on your toes all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good talk.
That's good. It's good, I think, for people just to get a measure of where they came from as well, for people
yeah.
who've done some of this work,
yeah.
to get a measure of, oh my gosh, when you look back to how far you've come
yeah.
and to how you used to think and now the quality of questions you're asking yourself. And also for people who are just starting out to, I suppose, just get an understanding that everybody starts somewhere.
Right.
And it starts with the question.
Yep.
You might have asked your question when you were 6 years old, just like we did, you know.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I think I was like, I remember how I used to do it.
Yeah.
And it was when I would go to bed every night, my dad would come up the stairs and I'd always ask him to come and tell
yeah.
me a story. So I, you know me, I love being
yeah.
frightened. I love horror movies.
So,
so he'd sit on the side of the bed with me and I'd say, tell me a horror story. And it was after the horror story, he'd always try to front the crap out of me. And then after the horror story, I'd always say to him, you know, proves me there's God. How's there a God? And I'd ask him these God questions, you know. So that was really when I was young. That was
when,
where it started.
When you were little, yeah. Mm. And so I suppose for people to go back and realize that at some point, you know, everybody's asked the question.
Yeah.
Just keep asking questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is an important point. We should probably finish up on this. That it's important to understand not to worry about the answer. When kids go to school,
yeah.
they're rewarded for the wrong fucking
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kids are rewarded, you know, 2 + 2 = 4.
So they're rewarded for the 4 rather than for
right.
how they got to the 4.
Yeah. So rather than being rewarded for embracing the challenge in the first place.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so embrace, don't worry about the result. There is no true answer. Be more concerned about the fact that you're asking questions. Be more concerned about, and stop and look in the mirror and acknowledge the fact that you are thinking outside of the square. That's
yeah.
one of the richest things you can do for
yeah,
yourself
totally.
Is stop and acknowledge that you are asking the bigger questions. It's cool.
Yeah, that was good.
Okay. TTFN.